Accession number 30143, reel 9.
Matthew Cook, reel 9. This is still Baghdad.
Yes, still Baghdad. And still Iraqi barracks, which for me is, I don't know if it's a childhood thing, it's just fascinating to see the enemy's barracks where they live, and sort of morbid curiosity. And so another barracks out in eastern Baghdad was one of the Republican Guard barracks, which I didn't know at the time, and I found some, it was completely destroyed, the vehicles had been looted, people were still taking the wheels off the vehicles. And their accommodation block had been destroyed, and their lockers were blown out, you know, into the sort of parade square, and their equipment was scattered. And their helmets were painted, obviously hand-painted by the troops, but with the American chocolate chip camouflage from the first Gulf War, so it's fascinating what goes around comes around. And their uniforms were British DPM, disruptive pattern material, so wearing British uniforms. And I chopped some of the badges off. It was only the red triangle that I realised they're a Republican Guard. But it wasn't until probably about a year ago I did an internet search, and the parachute wings and whatever the badge was, the closest I've been able to find is that they're special Republican Guards. I don't know what that is. It's sort of airborne Republican Guard. But it was fascinating just to see. I did bring back one of their helmets, and it's got the guy's handwriting with his name in it. And just quite fascinating to see the enemy's equipment, and these are the best of the best. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of burnt out photographs of which for me I feel slightly guilty for picking them up, but they would have rotted and just blown away, so I still don't feel like I was stealing, but just these little tiny snapshots of personal life. There's a couple of guys in their white shirts, obviously they're very ceremonial uniform, sort of arm in arm, quite tough looking lads with their parachute wings and I think British camouflage trousers, and obviously at some sort of parade, and the photograph is half burnt. It sounds so corny, you know, if it was in a film I'd go yes, like that would happen, but it was for real, and lots of documents and bits and pieces. I got to the parachute store and those were really being looted. There weren't that many people looting around, but their barracks covered quite an acreage, but just every now and then there'd be someone rummaging, and there was a goat herder wandering through just with his goats, which was brilliant. So I did a drawing of him just wandering through past one of their vehicles, which was stacked up on bricks and all the wheels had gone. It was just amazing, just visually it was fascinating. Spent hours and hours there, and again they had another ammunition store that was packed full of unused explosives, and I assume the Americans would have known and would have searched it out eventually, but quite dangerous at the time.
Yeah. Were you getting an idea, you know, from seeing all this, the standard of life they had as troops compared with, say, ours? Because you know, I know you're in the territorials and see a bit of it. Were they treated quite well?
They looked quite good. Yes, seeing the lockers, they were painted with the same chocolate chip camouflage. And suddenly, yes, it felt like an army barracks. Doesn't matter whether it was here or Germany or Iraq. It had a familiar feel. Yes, it was well tended again. There were white painted rocks and well tended sort of tomato patches. It felt like a barracks, so it was quite interesting.
You seem to have found a certain poignancy in this. Am I right in thinking that?
Yes, it's weird. I suppose an invading force wandering around the SAS barracks, isn't it? Maybe in the lead up to the war, everything was talking about the Republican Guard are going to cause trouble, that's going to be a fight. You know, mother of all battles. So maybe actually seeing it was
just sort of human beings.
Yes. Yeah, but an elite group, obviously. And I was amazed I found British Klansmen radios. They're called 349 radios that I still use in my equipment. And there they were, sort of discarded on the floor amongst the uniforms. So it's, very surprising to see. in hindsight, must have stolen some of the batteries. They're quite sought after back here. And yeah, there's one grisly bit. They actually had a blood bank where all the blood was stored in sort of IV type bags, and obviously in the sun, I think the roof of the building must have come off, and in the sun it was all rotting and stinking, and somehow a lot of the blood had just splattered everywhere. It looked quite grisly, just full of weird little images. I'm just inherently nosy, so I was just like a big kid nosing around. Just visually it looked amazing, so I had a great time. We went to a couple of, as I say, it's just in sort of random order, but the whole few days there were quite a blur. The taxi driver took us to some houses where allegedly the torture team, Saddam had his sort of torture gangs, they would torture people. They were just sort of rather anonymous houses in sort of leafy suburbs. And there was a weird, I don't know if this was just unique of the time, but people would paint the ownership of their house on the front wall. They would say, this is the house of Hamid so-and-so and so-and-so. Obviously all in the Arabic script. So obviously someone had taken their house back from the, obviously the secret police had taken over the house, and obviously someone had said, right, that was my house, I'm having it back. So people making their mark on what was theirs. Quite strange. Complete anarchy. I remember going to, again, just by the riverbank, there was a rather nice park full of children's playground stuff. It had a very big sort of arch, but it was packed up with a destroyed vehicle, so I had to clamber over that to get into the park. And inside this children's playground, literally next to the swings and things, was an anti-aircraft weapon on a truck, and over there was some quite high-tech looking equipment, a vehicle that had sort of satellite dishes, obviously for tracking or firing missiles. I've no idea what half the equipment was. And all the anti-aircraft weapons had all been destroyed, but the swings and things weren't. It really was sort of precision shooting, whoever did that. Just the incongruity of it was amazing. But it was open ground and there were scattered trees, so I can see why you try and hide your equipment in there. But then I remember some kids just opposite I think it was a post office building that the Americans, I think they tried to save it for as long as they could, but I think the Iraqis were still transmitting, so they ended up having to destroy it. And I remember, on some other anti-aircraft weapons that hadn't been destroyed, they're sort of tin barrel swiveling, and the kids were all playing on this weapon, still had boxes and boxes, thousands of rounds next to it, of incendiary rounds. Just amazing, great place for kids. I'd have loved to have been a kid. But God knows how many got injured with hand grenades and things. Then went to have a look at the state TV, and I think it's TV and radio building, which was still burning. I believe that, again, I missed out on the war, really, just being there. I really don't know what happened. It's only now that I'm sort of reading and finding out what happened. And I believe the Americans, again, tried to keep that intact, just as a means of communication, but I think Saddam kept using the propaganda, so I think it got hit towards the end. I'm not quite sure, but we had a good look around there. Still burning, huge plumes of black smoke. Okay, or should I? I wasn't really aware of the Americans there, but I just remember outside the state TV building, one of their M113, their sort of personnel carriers, got caught up in some barbed wire and just got bogged down. And I remember that I had a female driver who couldn't get the vehicle out of the barbed wire. I wasn't really aware of the Americans around there, apart from the location where we were by the hotels. In the evenings, again, sticking to an old tradition, we'd clamber up to the roof and I'd get my hexamine stove out, and by this time I'd acquired some American MREs, which are meals ready to eat. So So Hamid and I would share these, and I was also eating, you know, the nuts and some of the tinned food that I'd bought in Kuwait. So we'd go up onto the roof, sort of come dusk, to send the drawings and just sit and chat. And look, we had an amazing view. Yes, you could just see the Cross Swords the other side, but it's where most of that film footage was, obviously the hotel next door of the, you know, bombardment of Baghdad. I remember one instant we were watching, yes, it must have been the Green Zone, the other side of the river, and there was a fishing boat that was coming too near, and obviously there were some American sentries there, and they started throwing hand grenades at this fishing boat. But obviously far enough away, it wasn't meant to hurt, but huge spurts of water, and this boat, I just remember turning around, I'm not going to go there. So it was just full of weird little snippets of just weird, complete anarchy. As I said, no traffic lights, no street lights. At night time, I think the streets weren't very quiet. They were a bit foolish if we went out. And again, you'd watch the tracer fire at night time. Obviously less celebratory, because it was usually arcing across. If it's going straight up in the air, then it's someone celebrating and just showing off their weapon, whereas a lot of this was pinging straight across. I remember one day there was a massive great explosion. I think I spoke to my mum and dad on the satellite phone, and they said they'd heard on the news about this huge explosion in Baghdad, and it was the Americans blowing up some ordnance out near the university. So the next day went out in the taxi to go and have a look, and my impression was of this blackened area of probably 500 metres square, so probably a kilometre across, just blackened soil with a huge crater in the middle. And where we're standing, just by the gate, there was burnt American uniforms, and I think my dad said some of the Americans died in the explosion. It's bigger than they obviously set the charges, but it was a lot bigger than they thought. Rather foolishly, I went for a rummage and a walk through all of this, until I sort of stopped and realised every step was on a mortar bomb or more ammunition. It was just everywhere. Then the taxi driver thankfully found me a contact to buy some illegal fuel, and of course Kuwait being Kuwait, the vehicle I had runs on unleaded petrol, so where do you find unleaded in Baghdad? But obviously knew this guy and said, yeah, come to my garden, we'll do an exchange. And his garden wasn't that far from the university, and he had a bandage across his head, because I think a mortar bomb had gone through their roof from the explosion. And in their garden were embedded rockets and mortars, which I think had already exploded, but just the shrapnel and the debris had covered kilometres. So just a bit of an accident. And we did a bit of a deal. I can't remember trading in dollars, and I think I was using Iraqi dinars as well, because I had bags of them. You couldn't put them into a wallet. It was literally, I think I still had a Sainsbury's bag. I just smiled that I still had the Sainsbury's bag full of Iraqi dinars. So we did a trade, and I must have taken some of my fuel drums, and he filled up a couple of those with this unleaded. So I was quite happy. My puncture had been mended. You know, I had enough fuel to get back to the Kuwaiti border, so I was feeling quite happy. So after about a week of just a weird week, it didn't seem weird at the time, it's only now that I look back and think, that was absolutely bizarre. So each day is a completely unknown, what's going to happen today? It was just weird. We'd come back to the hotel at night time, and I would draw. There was a generator, so there was electricity for about 2 or 3 hours every evening, which was quite a godsend. No water, unfortunately. I think we had to flush the toilet using a bucket and either collected a bucket from downstairs. There were mouse droppings in the room, but clean sheets, so there's no way I was going to complain about it. And while I would be doing the drawings, you know, to send that night to the Times, Hamid would be kneeling down and doing his prayers. You know, and every roof ceiling of the hotel rooms had always pointed, there's a blue arrow pointing to Mecca, so everyone knows which way to point. And it just became normal, you know, him praying while I sent the scans. I remember chatting to my wife a few times on the satellite phone, And Hamid had obviously been to a Polish port at some point. He knew a few words of Polish. And my wife, being Polish, I said, "Oh, Hamid, have a few words." And he'd say, "Oh, dzień dobry," which means hello. And so, yeah, very bizarre again. I think she felt happier. So, okay, Matthew's with someone. He's not on his own in Baghdad. So, yes, I saw that from completely a random way. I was at the point at that time. I was never aware that there was a green zone. I don't think it existed then as such. But I knew. I think the army had taken over that patch, and I never really knew where it was. So, more out of ignorance, I got stuck to the sort of. I think it's the north side of the city, but so be it.
With your output while you were there. Was this being, you know, received and used by the time?
Yes, in fact, about the only direction I got came from when I was in Baghdad. I said, "Oh, Matt, I really like the drawings. Can you have a rummage around and see if there's anything to show sort of life getting back to normality?" And so, again, chatting to the taxi driver, he said, "Yeah, I noticed thing as a market. It's called the New Baghdad Market." Never found out why or how new, but he said it's back up and running, and I think it was in Sada City. I don't know what was then called Sada City. No, it was Saddam City, wasn't it? And I think they changed it to Sada. Yes, it was Saddam City. So we went into this fruit and veg market, which was just thriving, and they were so amazed to see a Westerner. You know, everyone just stop and their jaws would drop. I was sort of sat down, bought lots of cups of very hot sweet tea, and had a great time. Lots of people come up and talk. And they thought I was a normal journalist. That however much I said I was drawing, it just didn't go on. And, "Well, tell your paper that, you know, we haven't had electricity for 3 weeks," and blah blah blah. So they're all venting off their steam.
And were you drawing?
I was drawing.
You were.
Yes, yes. Some of the black and white drawings.
Yes,
but wherever I stopped.
Been there, aren't there?
Yes, wherever I stopped, I'd just get mobbed by people. So I'd start sketching, all I could draw was occasional figures, because I'd just end up in the middle of a crowd. But yes, fascinating. It did. Yes, it felt like life was returning. It was lots of fresh fruit and vegetables. So tomatoes are very prominent.
Were you picking up any of their thoughts on what was going on? You know, was it were they still grateful for the coalition?
Yes, I forgot to add this. Yes, as you drive through, maybe the kids are more vociferous in this, and they're all going down with Saddam, up with Bush. You know, lots of thumbs up as you pass, and obviously the adults often just look at you slightly sideways glance, and not quite sure what they're thinking. So, you know, as always, the kids are kids, and yes, it was still euphoric. Everyone was going down with Saddam. But obviously just by seeing some of that graffiti, the mood was turning slightly. I remember some of the hospitals going back a bit, going back a week into Basra. Someone had actually had a stencil, and obviously had a spray can or a brush, and the stencil said, "Thank you to Britain and the US. I think that was it. And it was sort of stenciled all around the hospital. It was quite fascinating seeing some.
Seems a long time ago.
It does, yes. That doesn't exist anymore. Yes, so after I think about a week of this just surreal, you know, a city in anarchy, there didn't seem to be that much damage to it. It wasn't full of burnt out tower blocks. It was apart from the barracks, I never saw anything really destroyed, so it felt intact. It wasn't as if it's a burning city. Yes, there were obviously this TV building was burning, and there were plumes of black smoke and lots of gunfire, but it was still sort of up and running. It wasn't like it was devastated.
And you were saying, you know, with this incredible image, the surreal image of the children's swings and the destroyed artillery. It implied that it was accurate.
It really was. Just the vehicle being destroyed. The trees were fine all around. Maybe scorched by the ensuing fire. But yeah, I'm not biased either way. But that it's it really one of those strange wars where the damage was kept to a minimum. Very odd. It didn't look it, as I said before, that that Saddam's troops lighting those oil fires, it made it look like the cities were being destroyed. And but once those burnt out, it didn't look too bad. But who knows? So after a week of this, a very bizarre week, it seemed like time to start heading back. And obviously, I wanted to go and see Babylon, which I can't remember, but it's about an hour and a half's drive outside Baghdad, so it's quite close. So I thought, right, I'll do that on the way back, head back to Kuwait or Basra. So we got up at about 5 a.m, and I asked Hamid, the taxi driver, I can't remember if his name is Hamid or not, Mohammed, I can't remember, but I asked him to lead me out of the city because I was still completely lost, and obviously I wasn't navigating, so I just let him drive around, so some of the locations I was a bit hazy on. So he drove me across one of the bridges, and I think we went quite close to the green zone, and I think Donald Rumsfeld was either visiting that day, but some bigwig was in town. So my car, obviously being the only vehicle around at sort of daybreak at 6, I was followed by 2 Apache gunships for about 50 to 100 metres above, just following me in my car, and Hamid in a taxi in front. And foolishly, I'd just taken the orange marker off the bonnet, thinking, well, in a day or two I'm going to take this back to her to the car rental. And suddenly I thought, I've got nothing to indicate, so God knows what these. And then I had to pay Hamid, so with these helicopters obviously now stopped while I got out of the vehicle, I had one Sainsbury's bag and some other plastic bag packed full of Iraqi dinars, and it wasn't that much money, it was sort of $50-$60, or I really can't remember the figures, but it looked like the most money he'd ever seen. So I gave him these 2 huge bags, he was chuffed to bits, and shook hands and big hug, and we sort of headed off, and the helicopters followed us for a bit and then just peeled off. So quite a weird exit to a weird place.
Did you put your marker back on again after that?
No, it didn't. I was really worried about it, sort of just in such heat, just sticking and being there permanently and me having to pay for the damage to the vehicle. It sounds rather stupid, doesn't it, worrying about that. Anyway, to me, maybe rather foolishly, it felt safe enough to take that off, but no, I can promise you vehicles out there now still wear orange panels, so it's another lesson learned. It's probably an hour and a half's drive to Babylon, and I remember coming up to a checkpoint and there were Iraqi police, and it was the first Iraqi police we'd seen, and Hamid was so pleased, he's going, oh phew, at least a bit of law and order coming back. And they just waved us through as soon as he saw us, a Westerner, didn't even stop to chat. But blue shirts and Kalashnikovs, a bit of control happening. And we stopped in a sort of tree-lined road just by what I later found out to be the Ishtar gates, which Saddam Hussein made as a replica. So that was a replica of the original gates, I think sort of 1/10 the size. So these gates were massive, so the originals must have been huge. And there was this old chap there's still a couple of people who were sort of looking after it. Apparently it had been looted, and I think some bits had been chipped off, some of the brick carvings and things. So I heard some bad stories, but someone had enough nous to try and look after the place and realise that it was a bit of their heritage. He went and showed me around, and obviously paid him some dollars. I think that's what he was expecting. But there was no one else around there. Maybe it was about 7:30 in the morning, so thankfully it was quite cool, but fascinating. We saw the lion, and what was almost more interesting were the real ruins in it, obviously where excavations had started, just one side. There was a massive sort of rebuilt chunk, which was all very impressive, but because you knew it was rebuilt, it didn't mean as much. But to actually go over some of these, they were growing almost lost in the grass and scrub, but these were the real ruins and real snippets of thousands of years before, and fascinating. And it's all dominated by this huge mound at the back where Saddam built another one of his palaces. really sort of ugly affair that was slapped on, where I believe the Americans took over as one of their sort of command posts. And by the time I was sort of coming out of having wandered around, some American troops were turning up for work that day, and they parked one of their amphibious vehicles and all the camouflage netting outside and left a sentry on top, so it just looked too good, you know, right in front of the Ishtar gates.
Yes, this was for you, I think, wasn't it?
Yes, yes, yes. Well, I think a lot of it was. No one was guiding me, so it's... Yeah. Yeah,
I must say, you know, the copy of your painting is incredible.
Well, that's lovely to say. That was fascinating. And then a long journey back, and I'm stopping at anything that looked interesting. I remember just outside Babylon, there was some railway tracks that had obviously again been hit by an airstrike, and there were some railway carriages all buckled up with, ironically, I think some American vehicles on the back of it, obviously Iraqi owned but American made vehicles, and some personnel carriers all flipped. It just looked like toys, literally flipped up onto the backs. Just the images are amazing. I'm almost getting blasé by this stage. I knew the newspaper wouldn't be that interested in endless drawings of blown up tanks, but that's something for me. I'll do.
Finding that you were working much quicker than you normally did?
Yes.
In this,
yes.
You know, was it a high learning curve for you?
Yes. Yes. I wasn't aware of it at the time. I was actually absolutely exhausted. This had been going on for almost 2 months at this stage. I was absolutely shattered at quite a high level, and which I wasn't aware until I got back to Kuwait. So this was, I think I did it in an entire day, headed back to Basra. So it was a long old drive from 7 that morning, or 6 that morning. I dropped Hamid off back at the hospital, and he met one of his neighbours who was a taxi driver, and I gave him my, you know, as much food as I had. I gave him the generator, which I hadn't even used, so he was chuffed a bit, and obviously paid him, so we left as good friends. And yeah, as Basra wasn't that far away from the border, I actually thought, well, maybe if I can beat the dark, I'll drive straight into Kuwait, which I did, and I think I crossed via Safwan. And as soon as I crossed into Kuwait, I was aware, I had a sudden relief that I didn't have to worry about being robbed or the vehicle being stolen or my food being stolen or being kidnapped. And I got there just as dusk, and I just slept by the vehicle just out in the desert, and just weird dreams. But yeah, it was like a weight off the shoulders, which I wasn't aware of at the time. And that pressure, it was self-imposed. The newspapers weren't chasing me going, right, we want drawings of this. It was purely self-imposed. Just, they'd invested a lot in me, so I thought, I've got to give it everything I can. So that was it. And then